Hi, friends. It's me, Duncan Trussell, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I really want to get this episode with Aubrey up, and so I'm not going to spend a lot of time working on the intro because this episode with Aubrey is like a drop of sweat from the forehead of Jesus right into the open, aching mouth of a thirsty angel. So let's just get right into it. But first, quickly, some business. We're brought to you by, we're partially brought to you by Amazon.com. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com, we have links. These are Amazon portals, and they will allow you to donate to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour every time you shop at Amazon. It doesn't cost you any extra. They, for some weird reason, give us a tiny percentage of everything that you buy. So there's no need to go to chain stores anymore. I don't know why you would want to do that. I don't understand why anybody would want to risk getting impetigo or lice or brushing up against one of those sticky Target kids with undiagnosed herpes, projectile vomiting onto every game console around them. They're basically just like vomit sprinklers everywhere. If you go to any of these chain places, there's like a 70% chance you're going to get some kid's carrot puke into your mouth. You're going to get some new form of smallpox or measles and end up alone in your house, surrounded by one of those oxygen tents, festering with pus-laden boils, exploding with flying, stinging larvae that climb into your eyeballs and chew your brain away, still somehow leaving you alive, screaming in the most horrific agony any human has ever felt. Don't risk that kind of death by going to one of these chain dispensaries of plastic. Get your plastic at Amazon.com because, God damn it, we need plastic and getting new stuff is fun. And if you're going to get new stuff, why not donate to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast while you do it? You want to get the fingernail of Christ? It's there. Puppy calendars, the Harry Potter series, Game of Thrones memorabilia, it's all there. Water filters, toothpaste, toothbrushes. If you live in New York or Los Angeles, they even deliver groceries. If you're going to go somewhere, make it a place that can be a chapter in your book. Not a place where you're going to be inhaling the oily Dorito farts of cannibals buying deodorant to pour on the corpses in their basement. Go to DuncanTrussell.com. There's a link. It'll take you right to Amazon. They give you a little percentage. Costs you nothing. Supports this podcast. Right now, I am using my powers of clairvoyance to look out into the audience of people listening to this right now, and I see you. Yes, you. You there, sitting on that armchair next to your aunt.
Mark Ferrandino.
She's watching Bill O'Reilly, and she won't stop talking about how much she hates Obama. She's got a slight tremble in her hands because her brain is slowly melting due to the pressure of all her rage and hate at everything in the world, including you. You've been taking care of her because you're a servant. You want to help the world, and somehow you've overcome the desire to throttle her or throw her into a pen filled with pit bulls or poisonous snakes or a swimming pool filled with lye and dissolve her body into some easily bottleable pulp that you could then sell at a school event. Instead, you've been taking care of her, rubbing mint oil into her feet at night, combing her hair. Maybe you're slowly falling in love with her. Something about your aunt is really transforming your heart into something you never expected it would be transformed into, which is an incestual pig. You don't want to face the realization that you want to hump your Republican aunt with minty feet. So if you want to drown out the bad thoughts, there's a quick way to do it. Go to audibletrial.com/familyhour and download an audiobook. And then instead of contemplating about thinking about this awful thing you and your aunt are about to do, which is disgusting and illegal, you can listen to Henry Miller or any of the great books at Audible. So there's so many things to drown out in the world. Why not drown them out with an audiobook? Audibletrial.com/familyhour. Sign up for a trial membership. You get a free audiobook, and they give us $15. So it's another way to support this podcast. Cancel the membership. You get to keep the book. Also, we have a shop located at duncantrussell.com. How are you going to find your soulmate if the world doesn't know you listen to this podcast? And the best way to do that is to buy one of our t-shirts and wear it around wherever you go. Guaranteed you'll find some sweet lover. The only thing keeping you away from that perfect man, that fella who, to quote Henry Miller, will shoot hot bolts into you until your ovaries become incandescent. He's out there, but you're not going to find him if you're not representing this podcast. And guys, you're not shooting any hot bolts into anybody until you finally get it together and go to duncantrussell.com and buy one of the shirts or posters or stickers. Valentine's Day is coming up quick. And if you don't have somebody to shoot hot bolts into, or if you're not getting hot bolts shot into, then it's going to be a sad day. Just know that if you're lonely on Valentine's Day, so am I. In fact, if you're lonely on any day, I probably am too. We're also brought to you by SureDesignT-Shirts.com. If you go to SureDesignT-Shirts, they have an incredible catalog of awesome t-shirts. Will make you the top dog of your hacky sack club. Go to SureDesignT-Shirts.com. Buy one of these shirts. My God, the fabric of these shirts is so very, very soft. It's like wearing the intestines of Marilyn Monroe. There are people who, when they leave your house, will leave you feeling a little more anxious, desperate, sad, lonely, empty, or hopeless. And then there are people who, when they leave your house, will leave you feeling exactly the way you felt before they got there. But there's a rare sort of person who, when they leave your house, they leave you feeling better than when they got there. And Aubrey's one of those people. He's like a tuning fork. I don't know what it is, but anytime I hang out with him, I always feel a little better about things and more inspired than I usually feel, especially lately. I have a man crush on him. I want to marry him, and I will marry him one day because he is my soulmate. I would seriously get in this guy's sweat lodge. He's a millionaire entrepreneur, a shaman, truly one of the coolest people out there. Of course, I'm joking about marrying him. I would marry him, though. Please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, the great warrior poet himself, Aubrey Marcus. Aubrey Marcus, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast.
Thank you, my brother.
How you been?
Glad to be here. I've been fantastic.
Yeah?
Living the fucking dream, Duncan.
You are living the dream, huh?
It's beautiful.
You're like Batman. You're the Batman of vitamin companies.
Yeah, I like that.
It's true. So, Aubrey, I have a thing I want to talk to you about. I've been thinking, like, who's my most tranquil friend? And you're my most tranquil friend. You're just this, you have this calm energy, but you also practice martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
So you seem to be the perfect person to talk to about something that I've been thinking about. But I just want to, first I'm going to read this article to you.
Okay.
Have you heard this new stuff coming out about how researchers think humans only have 4 emotions?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I'm going to read this to
really...
you.
Surprise me.
This is from the Atlantic Weekly. Just because you've got the emotional range of a God damn it, authors. Just get to the point. Actually, though, new research from the Institute of Neuroscience and Psychology of the University of Glasgow, published this week in Current Biology, says the range of human emotion may be a little closer to a teaspoon than previously thought. Conventional scientific wisdom recognizes 6 classic emotions: happy, surprised, afraid, disgusted, angry, and sad. But the Glasgow scientists studied people's facial expressions and the emotions they signal by showing people computer-generated facial animations. Blah, blah, blah. They asked the observers to characterize the faces based on those 6 basic emotions and found that anger and disgust looked very similar to the observers. The thing is, it went on. So anyway, the whole point is, this leaves us with four basic emotions, according to the study. Happy, sad, afraid, surprised, and angry, and disgusted. These are our biologically based facial signals. So that's the palette of emotion that human beings have to experience the universe, according to the study. And a lot of these feelings are feelings people actively try not to have. And in particular, the one that really gets sort of the stink eye in Buddhism is anger. Mm-hmm. Because they say anger is the second wound inflicted on you by your enemy. And that the feeling of anger, being, you know, feeling angry towards someone is like trying to burn them by holding a hot coal, a burning coal in your own hand.
Sure.
That you're sort of clinging on to this angry feeling. But sometimes people in your life will actively try to take advantage of you and will shit on you, right?
Yeah. Sure.
So in that case, it seems like, isn't anger good? What do you think?
All right. Well, I think to talk about anger, for me, you have to break out, you know, the three parts that comprise a human. And, you know, I think I talked about this actually on our last podcast. You know, Iboga gave me the nomenclature of mud body, which is the animal, you know, the
Iboga,
primate.
For those of you who don't know, could you tell them what that is?
Yeah, that's this crazy African psychedelic that lasts 24 hours and really gets you in touch with your inner truth. It's almost like you're talking to your higher self and finding out what you know to the very limit of your capability.
Okay.
It feels a little more magical than that, but at least to the very limit of your own capability of understanding truth. So basically it showed me, you know, it showed me that there's three parts. One is mud body, the animal, you know, the primate, the monkey. And then there's the ego, which it called mind boy was the name for
cool.
that. And then there's the higher self, which is the God self, consciousness. There's a lot of language that people use depending.
So who used this language?
So I came up with mud body, mind boy, and God self or higher self.
Cool.
Yeah. And then like Eckhart Tolle would say, you know, ego and the primordial self, and then consciousness would be the language that he uses. So people all have their own nomenclature for it. But I think you can generally point to about three different characteristics of that comprise a human.
Okay.
So then the first part, if you talk about the anger that happens inside the animal, it's a very physical, instinctual response and very natural. And what happens is you get angry and it's signaling your body it's time to fight. So the frontal lobes start to shut down and the reflective back lobes of your brain get more activated. The nervous system shuts off blood supply to the stomach, diverts it to the muscles and, you know, the skeletal system.
Wow.
So you're ready to fight. So it's why your hands, you know, you feel like you have energy in your body and it's coursing through you. Plus then you have adrenaline that's going through and you have other chemical reactions that are happening physically to prepare you for a fight. So, and that feeling is a really powerful feeling. It's like surfing in this wave. And it's like when people, you know, it's understandable when people get into these states of rage where they're not really thinking correctly. I mean, part of their brain is actually, you know, shut down and shifted focus to a very animalistic side. And it can, you know, sometimes be addicting because of all of these adrenaline. I mean, the reason why people like coffee is caffeine triggers adrenaline. That adrenaline can feel good and it can be addictive.
Yes.
So that part, while it can be good if you actually need to have a fight, you know, that's what it's preparing you for. If that's constantly happening and you're not having a fight, it's going to wear down your system. You're not supposed to be in a state of anger for very long. So then what generally makes us angry, it's very rare that you get into this kind of primordial, primitive, primate, mud body anger. You know, I mean,
I haven't had that since when I was a kid and my older brother would like torture me and like hold me down.
Right. Yeah. I actually like to work with that type of anger and just understand it. Even, you know, some of the fighters I work with and even myself, I do what I've coined, for lack of a better word, I've never really talked about it, but I call it the blood rage workout, right?
Yeah.
Where you envision that as you're doing some kind of exercise, like hitting the heavy bag. And listening, I like to listen to like the 300 soundtrack or something
okay.
like really heavy. And I envision that I'm defending someone I really love. Like, let's say my girlfriend, or let's say some, you know, my sisters or something like that. Like they're behind me.
Me.
And then this clan of you know, ogres is coming, orcs are coming to go take them and rape them and kill them. And I envision this and I play this scenario in my mind and I start to work myself up and start to feel that, you know, feel the blood go through to my hands.
Yeah.
And you get in this heightened state where you're almost slobbering and fatigue doesn't fucking matter. And you're just hitting and pushing and pushing.
This is awesome. Oh, let me stop you there because this is like the opposite of a meditation exercise that you would listen to. It would be a hilarious, great thing, like that gets you angry, a meditation to get you fucking angry.
Yep.
That's really cool, man. Why don't they have that? Keep going. That's really interesting.
I think it's a good kind of hack. So I keep going and I keep thinking like they're coming for me. And they keep coming and I'm slaying them by whatever action I'm doing. It could be I'm moving a bar or a kettlebell or a sandbag or just punching on the thing. And I just keep going, and you know, drool's coming out of your mouth. You start to well up tears in your eyes. You're building yourself into this frenzy of rage. And then finally, at the very limit of exhaustion, you just put down whatever you're doing, and you look out at these demons that you've created in your head, and you're just snarling like you've just gone through war. And it takes a little while to kind of recover from that, but it feels pretty cool, and it's good to be able to tap into that kind of primal current.
Yes.
And understand what that is and kind of play with it. Play with that energy because it's really, really powerful.
Do you think that's how dogs feel every time they start barking and that it just goes away instantly? Like that when I walk by fences that have caged dogs and they see my dog, it's like tranquil, meditative Buddha sitting under a tree to just what you're describing, just a hell missile. Like they get so mad.
Yeah. For sure. That's it. That's it exactly. Ready for a fight. You know, they think that their physical body is being threatened. And you have to create that threat. Anger comes from a response to a threat, whether it's in the physical or, as I'm talking about, the unhealthy anger, it's going to be threat to the ego.
Yes.
And so that's that kind of physical anger and just understanding what that's supposed to do. And, you know, as I said, I'm not a, you know, that is what it is. It's never going to not be there. If you're getting attacked or a mother lion is, you know, defending her cubs, or a mother, you know, human is defending her child. You'll see that. You'll see that in every species has that response to fight, except for maybe like a sea anemone or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But so then looking at the other anger, you have to look at the ego or the mind boy. And just as for the primitive self, like the animal to get angry, it has to feel threatened. Anger is a response to the ego feeling threatened. And the ego feels threatened by somebody diminishing its grandiosity. I mean, the anger response from the ego is, how dare you not recognize my greatness?
Sure.
You know, and that's what you're always saying. You're saying, how dare you not appreciate my correctness, my rightness, my intelligence, my the fact that I am here. You know, like if someone cuts you off, I am here. How dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you cut me off and affect my path, you know, you're disrespecting me, my grandiosity, says the ego.
Yeah.
And then so the response is anger, like I'm going to fight to defend this offense.
But what if someone steals from you? What if you find out that someone's been stealing from you, like one of your employees was embezzling from you or something like that? Or what if you find out that you're somebody that you're in a committed relationship with has cheated on you? Or what if you find out that, you know, like, shit, you know, the Woody Allen thing. Who knows what the truth is, but what if somebody's saying that you're a child molester and you're not? Or what if you were molested and one of the most loved people on earth who did it is like very articulately defending himself and making it so that you seem like you've been brainwashed? That's a different thing, isn't it, than the ego being unhealthily damaged. I mean, that's like that's a real thing.
So those things are actually happening. They're not phantom offenses. They're real offenses.
Yes.
They're real slights.
But it's still against the mind.
It's still against the mind. However, so to go to the third part, you know, and I think it's useful to talk about that. The third part is the higher self, the God self. That is the eternal life force that animates us and will continue to animate life for eternity in different species, in different ourselves. I don't know how it works, but it's the eternal force, the higher self. And it's invincible. It is God. It's part of God. It is untouchable. It cannot be diminished. It cannot be slighted. Mm. It cannot be offended. And that part never gets angry. It just cannot reach a state of angry because it cannot feel diminished. It sees the truth of everybody's actions, that everybody truly is the same as itself. And so it only can feel a sense of, you know, that's unfortunate that this manifestation is not acting in accordance with its higher directive. And it's only capable of understanding and empathy and love. So it's not even capable of anger, the higher self. So what you have is you have this battle between the higher self and the physical self. And in between is the ego. And so all of these offenses you're saying are not actually happening to the higher self. You can't do anything to the higher self. Yes. The higher self is invincible.
Yes.
What are you going to do? It's an eternal. You die, it reincarnates, goes up. I don't know how long it takes, but it goes up and reincarnates at some point, and it exists. It continues. It's not touchable, so it cannot possibly feel anger. And that's why these
okay,
old stories.
Okay, hold on. I want to stop you. I got to blow your mind because I know that you've never read the Bhagavad Gita. I got to read this verse. Hold on. I'm going to go get it. Do you mind? Because this is awesome.
No.
Okay. So this is from the Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 2, and it starts at verse 22. It's talking about the soul. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. The soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. This individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can be neither burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body.
Exactly. That's awesome. That's really cool. You know, because most of what I get from my own.
No, I know. That's what's so cool is because you got that from taking Ibogaine,
yeah,
and they probably got it from taking Ibogaine.
Whatever they took. Yeah, many roads to the same truth.
Yeah, but it is interesting because you could see this phenomena that happens where it becomes obvious that there is this transcendent thing and people, and you can come into contact with it, and there is absolutely no need for religion any more than there's a need for psychedelics or any more than that. There's just, like you said, you can come to it and see it. And that's why I love studying the various religions and talking with people like you, because it's cool to hear these different ways that the thing is described.
Yeah.
It's so cool, but it's still the same. The same essence thing. Is the same. So the soul, you're talking about the soul.
Yeah, the soul. So, you know, as the Bhagavad Gita says, it's untouchable. So, so competing for the driver's seat in the body is the mind and the ego and this higher self. And so when something really, you know, that really tests you happens, it's very difficult to maintain and leave the higher self in the driver's seat, because the ego tries to identify with the animal. The ego thinks, I am all that exists. You know, it doesn't like to recognize that there is another, you know, higher part of you that's really the key part that's animating you. The ego has, it's like an organism itself. It wants to survive. So any of these slights, the loss of property, the loss of body, the loss of, you know, the diminishment that comes from your girlfriend cheating on you. Really, that is, it's all just damage to that part of you, the mind, the ego. Now, is it, it's real, it's significant, it sucks. You know, nobody says it doesn't suck. And it would take a real master not to get angry. But really, the only thing that's happening is a diminishment to what you feel about yourself. When you get cheated on, it's, I feel like I'm less of a man because she chose somebody else.
Yes.
And so that diminishes. But do you feel like less of a soul? No, you don't feel like less of a soul. So, you know, unless it's an actual slight on your physical body, you know, on your actual survival, which should naturally trigger that primal instinct to fight. You know, I'm not saying don't ever fight. You know, I think there's a time for fighting, of course, too. But you have to be aware and at least be in control and know, is this a time to fight? Is this, because if it's not a time to fight, then that anger is useless.
But sometimes people wind up in a situation. And by the way, I'm not doing the thing where I'm talking like people or I know someone. I actually do know someone who's going through, he's going through a really rough thing in a relationship right now. And not me. I swear to God, you guys, I've told you everything about me. So I'm not going to like conceal something, but it seems like the anger actually helped him push himself out of a really destructive relationship. And if it hadn't been there, if that anger hadn't been there, it hadn't inspired some form of reaction, he would have just ended up just getting fucked over and lied to for a long time.
Yeah.
And in that case, isn't anger good?
Well, there's anger. Anger is going to change. It's going to change a circumstance. It's like putting a little, you know, it's going to switch up what happens, right? So sometimes that's going to happen and create a good result, especially when you're having a reliably bad result, you know? So presumably that could create a good result, but generally it's not the best way to do it. You know, the best way to do it would be to understand, this is not serving my highest interest. Mm. This is not making me happy, and send her away with, you know, best wishes and say, you know, I truly hope that you find your happiness
Hell.
Yeah.
In the flames of hell, bat creature. Go back down the chimney, you chupacabra.
I fucking hear you, man. I mean, I'm talking like this.
How do we write jokes if we don't get angry? Like, how would you do that? How are you going to come up with jokes, Aubrey? I mean, come on. This is the thing.
There's a lot of flavor. Anger is like a spice.
Yes. You know?
It gives a lot of flavor to things. And even the way I'm talking, it's not like I'm above anger and I never get angry. I get angry all the fucking time. You know, but I just know enough to be able to kind of release it and not let it be weighing on this constant. Because anger over a long period of time is the biggest problem. That's what, you know, you can call that a grievance. You know, it's some kind of long-standing resentment that you're constantly, you know, measuring yourself against. Some long-standing diminishment. These class of people have done this to me, or this other country did this to me, or this person, my family did this.
Yes.
And that's just really unhealthy.
That's insanity. And also, I think what I'm talking about is insanity, and I do think what you're saying is actually right. I mean, if you're getting into some kind of battle, what with yourself or with someone else, obviously, it's the clear mind that's going to achieve the highest objective. Anger will cause mistakes.
Yeah, and especially if you can't control it, you know, if it really takes you on this ride and you have no way to put on the brakes, it can be really bad. I remember the last time I got really angry. It happens to me when I'm kind of tired and fatigued and I'm already concerned about other things. When that allows for me with the ego to really be driving the ship, you know, because it has something to focus on. Oh, you're not feeling well. And it starts to really take over and I'm really disconnected. And it was, you know, about 18 months ago and I was recording a video in my office. I have the door closed and everything keeps going wrong. Camera breaks, card failed. And I was on like my fifth take, which is really annoying. I was already feeling shitty. And then someone came to the door and, you know, someone started knocking on my door right as I'm about to wrap this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if I was in a good mood, I would have just made the comment on the video like, oh, we got someone here at the door.
Yes.
You know, but because I was in already such a shitty mood and they just kept knocking and knocking. I was waiting for them to go away. And they knocked for maybe 30, 45 seconds. And I just was just like, what the fuck do you want? Blah, blah, blah. And it happened to be this really sweet little, you know, girl from the front office we just hired. And I come out like I come out like a bull, like, if you're not good, I don't answer, you know, don't. And then, you know, because I just had this wave of emotion that came out. I didn't know who it was. I wasn't directing at anybody. Just kind of yelled out into the space, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it turns out that it was her and I made her feel like really bad.
Permanent damage.
Yeah. She was like really sad. And then I saw that and I was like, that is really fucked up of me to have done that, you know, because I wasn't able to control that wave. And, you know, I mean, I can go back. There's times where you just kind of lose it. You get mad. And that was a good lesson for me to avoid that kind of thing.
Can you do me a favor and give me your definition of forgiveness, please?
My definition of forgiveness. I mean, I think forgiveness is when you can love the part of yourself that committed the act and love it fully in its imperfection without wanting to change it, without wanting to rewrite history or just face it fully and love it and love the fact that you were imperfect at that time. But, you know, that was you and you're not that same person anymore, but still love it.
That's so, so difficult to do.
So difficult. All this shit is really difficult to do.
On one level, it's incredibly difficult. But then when the way you were describing the soul and that, you know, I know that thing that you're talking about. And it's so trippy to really let yourself not be in your ego for a second. And then I always realize, like, you know, I was thinking the other day, I wonder if this thing that we're in right now, this human incarnation, is actually something we paid for in some other dimension, and we really don't want to ruin the show by getting too much into that idea of, like, what the soul, you know, getting into that. It's actually the thing that we think is enlightenment. It's just ruining the movie. It's like a big spoiler. And so the whole point is stay in your role. Be that thing and don't slide out of your role. Because whenever I start, you know, going to that place or feeling it happening, there is some part of me that's like, no, do not expand. What are you doing? It's no fun out there. It's all emptiness and spaciousness. And it's like, be a nice little curled up turd and tremble on the banks of reality.
Yeah, you feel like you'll lose the passion for the things of life.
Yes. Is that true?
No, it's not true. I don't think it is. I think there was a concept that Carlos Castaneda put out, and he said, you know, that the warrior, lives life in his controlled folly. Like, he knows that it's not really fully real and that there's another more real consciousness and existence out there. But you live in the controlled folly, and you do it for the hell of it. You choose a path with heart, and you choose something that you enjoy, and you do it for the hell of it. The problem is that when you're just this leaf on the, you know, at mercy of the wind, or a bottle floating on a stream, you have no control. And this dream that we're in tends to turn into a nightmare. So having the control to be able to remove yourself and then have some direction where you go and then let all that go and still be in the moment of the controlled folly, as Carlos Castaneda said, or the dream that we're having, that I think is the best way to live. That's the way to ensure that you're going to not only enjoy everything just out of a passion of enjoying it, and still, you know, be able to control your fate, so to speak.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Because you do have to, like, watch out. You do have to watch out, because you can end up being reactive, and that will lead you into weird predicaments. You know, I started, you know, meditating more and more and more than I ever had, and it really did start doing something. I don't know what was happening. It was doing something, but then as I stopped doing it, or as I sort of, like, somewhere in there, I started thinking, like, well, I don't know if this is what I'm supposed to be doing, or if I'm just supposed to be myself, and like kind of what you're saying, like, enjoy being that instead of constantly trying to induce a sort of peaceful state.
I think you can certainly, I think that kind of monastic life where you're in a monastery and you're abstaining from sex and just focusing on consciousness, I think they are missing the point. I think there is a level where if you're not engaging in the human experience, you're blowing it. You know, you're going to get back and it's going to be like, yay, good job, you won the game that was really not the game. So
we paid $600 so you could go to that interdimensional amusement park and exist as a human, idiot. You just laid on the couch and watched Walking Dead. You were supposed to be fisting. The only reason to be human is to fist. When will they understand that?
Yes.
That's enlightenment. Uh-huh. Well, man, it is such a, as they say, a razor's edge. It's such a delicate, delicate, tiny little path to tread upon, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you're there, you're there. Inarguably, undeniably there. And when you're not there, that's when you find yourself going down the river as a bottle, sort of spinning in odd directions. Mm-hmm. And those experiences, though sometimes nightmarish, can actually be some of the most amazing, beautiful moments ever. You know, I'm going to talk about a friend of mine. He was drunk and had some dimethyltryptamine and was he was telling me that he didn't want to do it because he wanted to do it like ritualistically, and he wanted to do it with respect and honor, and being an inebriated state and doing it, he thought would not be a really good move because that was bad. You know, it wasn't a pure state. So he did it, and this message came rocketing in from the universe to him, which was like, oh, there's good and bad states. Is that what you think? Because yeah. It's just one state.
Yeah.
And you, my friend said that the idea that you're cutting up the world into a more morality grid that you're projecting on it, that's not really it. That's mm-hmm. just more of you trying to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the idea is, it's like, maybe spinning is the bot. Maybe if we think that we're exerting controlled folly, maybe the folly is that we think there's any control there at all. You know what I'm saying? Maybe the folly is that we think that we have some sort of ability to really, really be in charge of things.
Right.
Well, we're not. Maybe we're not. We're just little specks on some.
Well, here's what we definitely have control over. We definitely have control over our reaction to what happens as the bottle goes
right.
on. Maybe we don't have control of the current, but we have control of what the bottle feels about the current. You know, we can either suffer by resisting these things that are annoying to us, or the things that we don't like to have, and trying to fight and wriggle against it and get our mind out of it. Or you can just go to a level of acceptance and just say, this is. And then as soon as you say this is, and you don't try to fight it anymore, you stop suffering. You
yes.
know, there's no suffering when you're in that present moment.
Right.
There's acceptance. This is not what my optimal state and
yeah.
condition and facts would be, but this is.
Yes.
And then at that point, that's what you can control. You know, and I think,
and that's a great place to act from.
Yeah. Ultimately, that's all we have to control, but it's all we need to control. If we can control our reaction to the external stimulus, that's 99% of the battle.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. No. You're absolutely right. It's just sometimes I hope I don't seem like I'm arguing with you. I'm just thinking.
No, I like it.
I'm trying to find the balancing place here, because it's like, you know, listening to Jack Kornfield and like really listening, taking my dog for walks and listening to Jack Kornfield and his soft voice and the relaxing way that he is and that tranquility, it's beautiful. I fucking love it. But then, like, think of the, I don't know if you ever heard the fantastic voicemail that Hunter S. Thompson left his TV repairman. Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't.
Can I play it for you?
Yeah,
real
for
quick
sure.
Hold on 1 second. Okay, here we go. This is Hunter S. Thompson screaming. Hey.
Yeah, I audio and video. Good. I hope it is Hunter Thompson in Woody Creek. I just, you people came up and installed a new DVD a combination tape player. I don't know what the hell brand it is. What is it, a friggin' brand? Well, whatever. No, it really, the problem is that when JVC, when it was installed, first the machine is so good, it sucks. So I want to get rid of it. I'm like, machine won't run, it jams. But second, I want somebody up here tomorrow to unscramble the goddamn maze they made out of my sound system and my video system. All these goddamn wires coming and going, and I can't get any goddamn thing on anything else. Any other machine. Some asshole came in and scrambled all my wiring, put it into the back. A new TV set I got from you. A goddamn JVC thing. What kind of fools you send out on here? And I need somebody up here tomorrow, Saturday. And I want this goddamn thing repaired, fixed up. And I want my original system working the way it did. I don't give a fuck for this horrible cheap little machine you put in there. This tin can JVC thing. I'll get rid of it. But I want my machine working. I want my other video cameras working. I want audio. I want everything in there working. And I know I have the names of some people on some kind of repair order. I won't get on you a minute you get up. I'll be on your ass all day long unless you call me at this number and get somebody up here tomorrow. It's 94. Oh, God. Let's see. Yeah, 970 area code. and it's Hunter Thompson. Hunter S. Thompson, and I live in Wee Creek, Colorado. And I, you people have caused me enough trouble. Remember what I'm going to do. The question is what you're going to do. If I set in the fix by tomorrow, if I hope my system isn't rewired, there's nothing. If your setup is still here tomorrow night, I'm going to destroy it and write about it. Yeah, I write a column. Terrible. I write about a lot of things. You might have heard or read my name somewhere. I write books. I write things that get out people read. I'll read your fucking name. You goddamn idiot. You fuck up my system. Yeah, you wait. You can check what I'm going to do. Go to any bookstore or any magazine where I can look. You can see what the fuck I can do to you. And I will. You bastard. You fuck up my system like this. And then, God damn it. Fuck you. Get up here.
That's so great.
See, man, the beauty in that, the humor, the beauty, the vitality in that. Mm-hmm. It's so vital and beautiful. Now, you could then point out how he died.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it certainly adds to the spice of the whole experience, you know. And I think I definitely hear what you're saying, and I think there's a balance, you know. I mean, while that's amusing to us,
yes,
you know, and that adds to our enjoyment, it perhaps is a little selfish because maybe that didn't add to his enjoyment. Although we love him for it. We love him for that kind of, you know, character that he was. And it's funny and it's cool for us to see because it reminds us of us being human. I think when we try to not be human, I think it's a mistake. I think that ascetic lifestyle of trying to not deny your humanity is bullshit.
Yes.
You know, so when something like that, we've all been there, but to hear someone iconic like Hunter S. Thompson say it, it's fun. It's part of the poetry of life. And, and I'm all for that.
Yeah, man. Because there needs to be, you know what? Also, there needs to be fucking justice, man. There needs to be justice. There needs to be corrections. There needs to be, you know, like, there needs to be a fuel that drives the action that brings people low who need to be brought low. People, tyrants, you know, like, we need that. When I think of, like, Martin Luther King, for example, mm-hmm. giving his speeches, I don't think those speeches came from a state of tranquility. I think they came from anger, and then they were converted to tranquility, maybe. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, when you see people of your skin color getting hung from trees and set on fire and dragged around, you're not going to start off at least with a feeling of like, oh, there they go, dragged by the back of a car.
Right. And I think that's a failure. That attitude is being out of balance. But I would disagree with you. I think the difference between Martin Luther King and, say, Malcolm X was driven by anger.
Yes.
Right? And he was far less effective. Martin Luther King was driven by passion and love. And that enthusiasm, you know, for doing what he's doing is one of the most powerful forces in the universe. Anger is a powerful force, but not nearly as powerful as passion, you know, and this kind of righteous passion to help humanity. And it's a source, it comes from love. I think that is even more powerful. Even, you know, that the fight to defend anything, if it comes from the love of what you're defending, you know, it's going to be way more powerful than just sheer anger. That's why, you know, all of the military leaders will say it's way more difficult to fight someone defending their home than when you're meeting in some weird battlefield somewhere far away. It's because, you know, the love for your people, your humanity, what you're defending, what you're protecting. And I think that is the fuel for that, that passion. Whereas, you know, Malcolm X or someone was like visibly angry, and he's still effective in certain ways, but not nearly as powerful as someone like Martin Luther King.
You know what? I'm going to play another sound clip to balance out, to show the other side of this, from the Hunter S. Thompson fury at nothingness mm-hmm. to, have you heard this clip where the guy, everybody's getting to talk to the serial killer?
No.
Okay, hold on. So this is the BTK killer, and, you know, he got convicted of murdering a bunch of people, and when that happens, the families get to stand in front of the person and say to them, hey, this is what, you know, generally they are just like, they scream at them and say horrible things. So this is the guy, and he was just blank faced the whole time, but this is what made him cry.
he sat there stone-faced.
Hold on.
As victims' relatives damned him and mocked him.
He's an animal. I wish for him to have a long, suffering, cruel death.
He's gonna go to hell, and that's where he belongs.
But then the emotionless facade finally cracked when the father of one of his victims appeared to surprise him with a dose of human kindness.
Mr. Ridgway, there are people here that hate you. I'm not one of them. You've made it difficult to live up to what I believe, and it is what God says to do, and that's to forgive. You are forgiven, sir.
And he just starts sobbing. He just starts sobbing.
What a sweeter revenge that was, you know, than all the screaming, you know, because some part of him, you know, I think the retribution that happens is the higher self is really appalled when the ego acts way out of accordance with what is for the greatest good, what is for love. And so when other people are punishing you for that, it almost feels right. It feels good, you know, but the worst pain comes from when you have to realize and come to face with the fact that, you know, it's on you, and the shame that higher part of you feels for going the wrong path towards humanity when there's nobody else who is lashing you and it comes down to you to come and face that. I think that is the worst torture. I think that is actual hell, you know, and I had that experience the very first time I was doing psychedelics. As I understood, you know, I had my kind of body evaporate and I really completely went out of my body. And I understood at that point that you look back on your life, and if you've lived well and lived with love and created happiness, you know, for humanity, that's a heaven. You know, you're gone, you're free from all the suffering of this world, and you've lived well and you've, you know, done your tasks to the best of your ability, and you're reunited with that source of infinite love. And then, however, if you've lived like this guy, you know, and done horrible things, you really have to face that with no blinders, just your eyes wide open and look at what you did and how much you failed this existence. And trying to forgive yourself at that point is an immense, immense task. And that is true, true hell, because there's nobody else outside, you know, lashing you and punishing you for your actions. It's all upon you to take in.
But how do you turn it into heaven? I mean, how do you, even the BTK killer, according to this guy, by the way, if you guys watch the video, I'll have it on my website, but if you go to that video, he's wearing the most amazing suspenders ever. He's wearing rainbow suspenders, and he looks like a gnome. It basically looks like this guy killed a child of somebody who worked in Santa's workshop or something.
Or was
like
Santa.
He killed Santa's...
Yeah.
He killed one of... That was Santa Claus!
Yeah,
holy fuck! Jesus Christ, I wish I had video for this, because you guys could see Santa Claus forgive the BTK killer. Yeah, man, the crazy idea here is that everybody's forgiven. Mm-hmm. When that guy forgave the BTK killer, I mean, imagine if a serial killer killed someone that you loved, and not just killed someone you loved. The BTK killer, you know what that stands for? Bind, torture, kill. So he would tie people up and for days, I think, torture them and then finally kill them. So whatever death this person's loved one went through was a brutal and miserable death.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, though, if this guy is saying, I forgive you, and he sure doesn't seem like he's bullshitting, and he definitely wasn't trying to, like, jab anything into this guy. He was just like, I don't know. He's just the universe, like what you're saying, this higher force manifesting through him, but... If he can forgive that guy, then you have to forgive yourself. You do have to forgive yourself.
You do.
And the hell that you're
ultimately
in, this hell you're in, it's you're the one lighting the fires every morning, right?
Yeah.
You're the one setting the torture. You're the one binding and torturing yourself.
Yeah, it's an immense sadness, and I don't know how long it takes. I don't think there's even time in that state. But I know, you know, when your eyes are open to it, that there comes that point. But ultimately, yes, you're right. There is forgiveness, and that's part of all of these teachings. And the forgiveness comes with understanding that, you know, the mistakes that you made as this human incarnation. And then, as you said about forgiveness before, you know, loving yourself in spite of it, you know, and loving yourself for your gross imperfections. And ultimately that can come about. But I think, you know, I really feel that they're at that point of kind of limbo in consciousness. And you know, I don't think really time applies, but there's a reckoning and it's a process, you know, because you have to feel, you know, you feel that sadness. It's not like instant, like, oh shit, screwed this one up. Yes. You know, like I really do believe that you come to a reckoning, and it's very challenging to kind of go through that. But ultimately,
challenging, it fucking sucks, man.
It is hell. You know, it's hell. You know, that's the word. And you know, people have actually made it out. You know, they say, oh, fires and devils and torture, and go to the top of a church in Italy and you'll see all kinds of versions of hell. You know, this is the real hell. This is you, you know, realizing at the very deepest level you failed. Because even in all of these other situations where someone else is punishing you, you know, you'd be pissed off and you'd be, you know, fighting. It'd be physically, obviously, terribly uncomfortable, but that kind of inner deep, deep, deep sadness.
What did you fail at? What was your hell? Can you talk about it?
You know, I didn't obviously do any of these gross things, but I mean, I think when I passed off to that point where I was in the infinite, I was fairly, you know, I was fairly tranquil. But I did look at some of my past relationships, you know, some things that I've done that were very, very selfish. You know, I remember one in particular was pretty recent. I'd had a relationship that I, you know, continually like got back together and broke up with this girl, got back together, huh. Broke up, got back together, broke up, and just sent her on this kind of like emotional ringer. Cause I would think, oh, I really want to beat her. I made a mistake. And I was like, oh no, I made the right choice. No, I made a mistake. You know, I was young. But I saw kind of what I had put her through. And I was really, really deeply sad at the fact that I had failed in reading my own emotions and drawn her on this tug of war of...
What did you do? How did you fix that? Did you call her? Did you get back together with her?
The ultimate fail. The out-of-body experience, total fail.
Yeah, because not like the people who come in contact with this great God mind who has this brilliant wisdom, they're not all going to be smart. Like, some of them are like, so you mean we should get back together? That's what you're saying? How did you make amends?
Well, I had to come to peace. I had to come to peace with it. I think I did write her a letter and just, you know, shared some of my emotions and just tried to be as honest as possible and just let her know that I, you know, from my very heart, apologize for my own failures and, you know, that I truly wish her the best. And, you know, that's all you can do. And then you literally have to forgive. You can't keep beating yourself up over these past things. You know, you have to go through it, feel it to the very depths. You know, and not be afraid of feeling those things. I think so many times people are afraid of these emotions that come up. You know, yes. I really believe you just fucking keep digging. If you're going through a hole, you know, you don't try to claw your way out. You just dig through to the other side and go through to the very depths of that pain where you feel so much sadness. You've wrung that last tear, like the drop of dragon blood that turns into a ruby. You've wrung that last tear out of your body, and that's all you can give. And you've hit that bottom, and then, you know, you can release it.
Wow, man. How cool. And what an intense process that is. It's just so intense. Because it's like, it's not, you know, everyone has this idea of the way things should be. So maybe people who haven't fooled around with letting themselves feel, or actually feel, they hear this and they have this idea of like, I bet I know what that hell state he's talking about might be. But I don't think they understand exactly how, in the way that you were saying, like in anger at its height, is this, your brain is actually changing the blood flow of your body. You're everything's shifting. In the same way, there's an intense version of sadness that is like that. There's an intense version of like, heartbreak is what they call it, really. And
if you take it to the extreme, it can be intensely purifying. You know, it can really purify your consciousness, your intent. You know, even, you know, grave illness, you know, I think there's a famous Latin quote. I wish I knew the Latin, but, you know, something about if only we were as good as we, you know, promised to be when we were ill, when we were healthy. Wow. You know, that feeling when you're really at the fucking end and you're like, if I can just be well, it's life, you know, I'm going to attack life with so much zest and be, you know, there's a very kind of purifying state that deep, deep sadness or deep, deep illness can bring to consciousness. If you really allow yourself to experience it. Otherwise, you're fighting it constantly and you're just going to drag yourself deeper into a
When is it hole. Indulgence?
It's indulgence when you use that to as part of your identity. When you say, I am the sick person. Hey, everybody, I'm the sick person. You know, look at me, victim. So you see all the bad things that have happened to me? You know, so you're eliciting, you're playing that as part of your identity.
That's yes.
Or hey, everybody, look at me. I just got broken up with, you know, poor me. And when you're trying to elicit that you're pandering for some kind of empathy from either yourself or the world, that's when it's indulgence.
Why do we do that?
It feels good to the ego.
God,
ego
it feels
likes
good.
That thing. Yeah,
fuck,
the ego
it feels
fucking
good.
Likes that thing. He likes, ego loves a pity party.
Oh,
loves a pity party.
Throws pity parties
all the time.
Every weekend.
Every day. It's like tea time for the ego. Pity party. Invite as many fucking people over as you can and just serve it up hot and cold and in biscuits and cookies. Smoke it, inject it, however you can get that pity in and around, spreading it. That's what the ego loves.
Fucking mainlining pity,
mainlining
man.
Pity.
Oh, yeah.
Free basin.
Pop that vein and inject some pure Mexican pity right in my fucking vein.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Pity. That is so funny. When you recognize that this incredible trick is being played on you by some part of yourself that isn't even you at all.
Yeah, totally.
And that those moments of freedom that come from just being like, oh, wait, what? you did it again.
Yeah.
You totally tricked me again. Like, every single time I, like, say, when you come out of it, you're like, I'm not going to fall prey to that again. And then, sure enough, you'll realize that you've been shuffling around for a week or 2 weeks instead of just, like, rising out of it. That's the idea of being a warrior, right?
That's it. The warrior is someone who does battle with the parasite of your mind every day. And that's it. It's a fight. And, you know, and ultimately it's a little bit misleading because when you think fight, you think, I have to really mount up and grit my teeth. Actually, the most effective way to fight that is to, you know, kind of let go of a lot of things. But the fighting metaphor and the warrior metaphor, I think, still works. But you just got to make sure that your strategy is correct. You know, sometimes you need to fight and push, and sometimes you just got to let go. And that's the way you fight the most effectively.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess it's energetic is why the word warrior seems to apply to it, even though, it's not like a constant wrestling match at all. I know what you're saying, but it is that, and also it seems to have within it this intense focus on not fooling yourself.
That's, you know, of all the people we fool ourselves. We lie to ourselves, you know, more constantly than anybody, and that's the most detrimental thing that we can do. You know, that true honesty with oneself, I think, is one of the most important things you can seek.
Yes.
Not deluding yourself, not pretending that anything is what it is or justified or blah, blah, blah. Your grievances, your jealousies, it's because look at her. She's a fucking flirt. You know, if I didn't tell her to stay home every weekend, she'd be out sucking every dick in town. You know, like, you get these weird justifications that justify your behavior, which, you know, deep down, you know, like, that's fucked up. That's not the way to do it.
Right.
You know, but you create these little worlds that protecting your ego, protecting your actions, and facilitating behavior that's not what you should be doing.
It forces you to live a lie. Mm-hmm. You just have to live in this make-believe land where you're some kind of martyred hero waging these little mini wars against anything that threatens your identity.
I wonder, you know, Graham Hancock plays with this idea of actual, like, demons, like pure evil, like a desire to do evil for evil's sake.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And this is something I really don't know, and so I'm interested to hear your opinion on it, because I think that most of these people, like the BTK killer, they somehow have some justification of how they can do this, and it still fits into some framework of, well, I was tortured, and Bob, they have this sure. complex, fucked up way that they kind of rationalize what they're doing, and plus they're getting these, you know, dark, primitive, you know, feelings that are rising up as they're doing it, and it's all swirling, you know. But I wonder if there is some people who just are not deluded, have no rationalizations or justifications, and just know straight up, I am doing evil. I am a fucking minion of chaos in the darkness, you know?
I remember talking to somebody once, and you know how, and I think she was like schizophrenic, but you know how sometimes schizophrenic people can say really profound things, even though mm-hmm. it's more symbolic, but she was saying to me, they at night they take barrels of gasoline and they pour them in the rivers. They are trying to destroy the earth for no other reason than to destroy the earth. They want to poison and kill. And I was thinking about that, and I'm like, whoa, what if there really were people who just wanted to destroy the planet? They really did. They just, that's what they wanted. They wanted to kill. Mm-hmm. They wanted to kill Earth. And so they did start intentionally poisoning the water. And then I started thinking, like, all right, well, let's imagine that. There's some kind of, like, dark purity in that, you know? Like, you're a force of destruction. But what would be one step worse than that? One step worse than that would be pretending that you're helping the Earth with whatever your industry is, while everything around you is proof that you're poisoning the Earth.
Well, that's just an effective strategy. It's a means, you know? It's a means to be more effective at your objective, which is destroying the Earth. I wonder if when, you know, that divine force, Source, when Source said yes and all this existed, because that's really the only thing that Source can say, yes or no,
right?
You know, and says yes, so all of this exists, then if to balance that out, as everything seems to have a counterbalance, there was some force that got created that had to push up against it and say no and be this destructive opposite force. It's kind of like that Zoroastrian kind of philosophy.
Yeah.
Where that kind of came into being with, you know, as soon as there was the yes, there had to be the no. And maybe there are, you know, beings that are connected to that no energy, just as there are beings connected to that yes energy, and that they form this kind of lock so that this whole thing can work. I don't know.
I think there are beings, and I think that they have names and that they have personalities and they're mm-hmm. disembodied, and some of them are good and some of them are bad, and you can get lost in that entire level of things. And there's, you know, there's schools of magic only based on making identifying these various sort of disembodied states and purely coming into contact with them so that you can get information for them, or so that you can gain something. Mm-hmm. And even the Dalai Lama in this, I remember listening to this, I think it's on Netflix, it's this like lecture he's giving, and he just sort of casually, it's not part of it, he's like, they're disembodied beings, but mm-hmm. they too experience the same essential problems that humans do, which is they're impermanent. And it was just the way he said it was just so casual, you know, and that it's just like, and it's the Dalai Lama. And I'm not saying like the Dalai Lama knows everything, but
he knows some shit.
And the human, so regardless of whether or not, you know, Carl Jung said that the what neurosis was, is that aspects of the self that you are unable to accept split away, yet they still have their own consciousness. And so the splitting away from yourself, it's like a little, if you were a bubble, it's like the bubble has broken away, a little other bubble has broken away, and that bubble has the same consciousness that you have, but the illusion of separation from you, in the same way you have the illusion of separation from the people around you. And so that thing then could begin to take on a life of its own. And so that thing could begin to actually, in the darkness of your subconscious, develop its own personality. And that personality is what you could then say, if you wanted to, you could call it a neurosis, or if you wanted to use a simple Old Testament term, you could say, that's a fucking demon mm-hmm. that lives inside of me. And that demon, when it comes out of me and takes control, when it manages to get into the control room and grab the steering wheel, that's when I turn into a different person. And that person comes out of me and just has pure justification and reasons for doing everything just like I have right now. It's just not a dominant personality or part of myself. So I think it's easier sometimes if you're just like, that's a smoking demon.
Yeah.
That demon wants me to inhale poison. I have a demon that's wanting me to inhale cancerous poison.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. I've never really known where I stood on this disembodied entities like ghosts and things like that. And then I had an experience actually at this hotel I'm staying at, an old hotel. I'm staying at the Pally House in Santa Monica, and it was an old traveler's hotel in the 1920s. And the first time we stayed there, not this trip, but the last, it was really creepy when we went into this one room, and it's room 111. And so we go into this room, and in the middle of the night, lights start turning on, and weird shit starts happening, right? And then I'm having this dream that there's this person in the room named Wild Bill. It was like Bill McLennan or something. Like, I had his full name. His nickname was Wild Bill. And it was like a really unusual experience for me. And I just kind of slept it off. Obviously, I was thinking about ghosts, so maybe I just had a dream about ghosts. But it really got me thinking about, like, what if there is a possibility? And the only thing I could think of was that, kind of like you said, belief is one of the most powerful organizing forces in the universe. You know, and if the ego believes that it exists independently of the higher self, perhaps it believes so strongly that even when the body dies and the higher self leaves, that ego can remain as an entity, as a non-physical dimensional entity, and last and survive until the ego realizes, oh shit, I'm not really anything, and then gets whatever reabsorbed into source. But it seemed to make sense that if that ego believed strongly enough that it existed at that time, that it could persist and even then have, you know, the higher self split off and, you know, get recycled back into other life or however that works. I don't know. I haven't plumbed that deep, but that seemed to me to be a possibility.
Well, I like to think of it in the from the perspective of, you know, every single experience you're having is an experience that's a replication of whatever's happening outside of you. So the entire experience of existence is a interior experience, in the sense that your eyes and ears and mouth and all the organs of perception are translating waves of phenomena into the human experience. And so that translation, what it's doing is it's taking, like, you look at a cup and it's bouncing those light waves off into your eyes, and then your brain is reassembling the cup. So the cup that you're seeing in your mind is not the cup that's there. It's a replication of the cup. So the mind then becomes the medium within which the cup can exist inside of. Mm-hmm. The neurological matrix has manifested a cup temporarily.
Yeah.
So in that same way, perhaps these disembodied entities that you're talking about are just sort of like radio waves that are always there and clearly need our minds to exist within. You know, it's because it's like they're using our neurology to tune in a little bit. It's like when you're listening to the radio and another signal comes in. Or sometimes it used to be, it doesn't happen anymore, but even on your wireless phone back in the day, you would be talking and suddenly you'd hear your neighbors like, get groceries, honey. Like, what? It's the weirdest thing, right? So maybe in certain places, there's signals or frequencies, in the same way that there's signals and frequencies wherever you go that are a little louder. And those tune into the wiring of your brain enough so that you think you're seeing a ghost.
Sure.
You're just tuning into this frequency that's there.
But is there a dimension where there's pure frequencies, and can the frequencies experience each other? That's another question.
Yeah, there. I mean, aren't we? Isn't that what we are anyway? We're our own little frequencies. It's just our
human frequency.
The human frequency. Yeah. There's the Christ frequency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of people talk about this Christ consciousness, like that you can tune in to the compassion of, you can just tune into a field of pure compassion.
Sure. It's the higher self. Yeah.
Yeah. The higher self. And there's approaching that state of, pure oneness, the closer and closer you get to it, you start getting these refined sort of archetypical forces, the mm-hmm. love force, compassion, hate, whatever. All of them are sort of there, living as their own entities, disembodied from the mind and the self. And those things you can tune into. And those are the gods, the demigods, whatever, sure. the angels, whatever you want to call it. You can get lost in this because it's real. It's fucking, I swear to God, I think one of my neighbors owns a helicopter. I'm like pretty sure one of my neighbors owns a fucking helicopter and just takes joy rides around the neighborhood. Because this, either that or I'm just like being constantly monitored by the government. Both are like,
both are happening, actually.
Listen to that. Just circles around. I swear to God, if government
I can feel it in my seat. That's not, you know.
It's that low.
Yeah.
That's not safe, man. This whole thing with flying cars where people are like, yeah, people are going to have flying cars soon. Like, no.
Yeah.
I don't want fucking everybody to be able to fly around in a car. Like, cars are going to be crashing into houses all the time. I don't know who's in that fucking helicopter right now. That could be somebody who's snorting rails of PCP and getting his cock sucked by a fucking...
How else do you fly a helicopter, Duncan? That's like part of the training routine there. You don't even get your wings until you've done that.
We just take it so lightly. When these fucking helicopters flying over, everyone's like, oh yeah, that's somebody who should be in a helicopter. How do you know? How do you know that's not a talented 8-year-old who climbed into his dad's helicopter and is like about to crash into your house? Let me tell you, dying from a helicopter blades turning you into a fucking human smoothie? No thanks. It's terrifying, man. But the point, to get back to summoning demons, the idea is that, like, that you can, I'm 100% positive that you can tune into these frequencies. And the whole notion of disembodied to me is kind of like, well, I mean, I don't know. Everything that I see, I know is embodied because it's my mind translating something outside mm-hmm. of me into me. So... are these aspects that we call higher angels, demons, sprites, fairies, gnomes, elves, all the things that people have talked about since the beginning of time, are these things part of our consciousness that's separated or bubbled away from our main self, or are they external things that we're tuning in on? I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
The only thing that matters is what are you tuning into them for a good reason, and if you are, should you listen to them or not listen to them? Because once Ram Dass said this awesome thing, which is just because something's disembodied doesn't mean it's telling the truth.
I like that.
You know, because a lot of people, they get...
oh, this elf told me this. It must be correct.
You're going to believe a fucking elf?
It could be just having a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. You know, when I took the ayahuasca, and the ayahuasca shamans all have a belief system of... you know, 9 dimensions. So the 9th dimension is being pure, you know, Christ consciousness, higher self, God, whatever. They have their own name for it. It's, you know, this pure force of love and energy, and it's the divine. Then the 8th dimension is this kind of realm of pure potentiality where anything is possible and you can affect all the layers. But you start going all the way down. 5th dimension is the dimension of dreams. And these are like, you know, these are where ghosts would be, and you know, where you can talk to the spirits of your relatives or whatever. And then so it's like human-ish consciousnesses that you can interact with. And then they start going up, like the 6th dimension. That's the realm of angels and demons. These are larger entities that have accumulated more energy somehow or whatever, and they're more archetypal forces. This is when you get, you know, the lady with the crocodile head who comes to talk to you, and all of these people that they see familiarly in ayahuasca visions, that's where they live. They live in the 6th dimension. And then the 7th dimension are these gigantic beings that are just entirely energetic forces. They don't really, if they're communicating to you, it's just so your own mind can understand through language, you know, but they're very archetypal forces.
Wow.
And so that's not, you ask them and it's like, well, why do you think that? It's like, well, we fucking go through the layers and we see it like every night. So why are you asking me stupid questions? It's like, why would I ask you, you know, how's traffic? You know, and say, how do you know traffic exists? Well, because I fucking sit through it.
Yeah.
And it's bumper to bumper, you know?
Yeah.
So for them, it's as real as can be because they encounter these things frequently and they know them and, you know, they understand and interact with them. And I was able to, I kind of went through the fifth and sixth dimension, you know, pretty, I was floating around. There were snakes and eels and these different things, and nothing was really talking to me. Well, except for the second time when I had a dragon and eagle. It gets, wow. gets deep, right? But I went, at one point, the most powerful experience I had was this seventh dimensional experience where there's this giant flotilla of snakes and earth and dirt and feathers and whatever, and it came over me and started sucking the smoke out of my body, right? And then it just moved on. And it was huge, I mean, massive football stadium size thing that was just above me for 5 minutes. And then this other giant metallic ship came in and came up above me and had all this, you know, cryptic writing on it and runes. And I looked up and I lifted the bottom. I don't know why I did this, but I put my tongue to the roof of my mouth. I opened my mouth and this beam of light just beamed through to the bottom of my tongue and was just filling me up. And I was feeling more and more joyous and ecstatic. And it felt better and better and better until that thing finally left. And then poof, like the world blew out. And it felt like I was in another dimension. And I've only been there that one other time before. And it felt like my head peeled off and the whole game was changed. There was me and the shaman in this dimension. And I could see all the other dimensions and manipulate things. But I didn't know what the fuck to do. But I could change. I felt like I could change things. I saw my whole life. I saw things from business to health to all kinds of things. Just, I was like within the fabric of creation at that point. And that was, so I experienced, you know, going through these layers myself. So I tend to give some credibility to, you know, their paradigm.
I've seen way too many fucking elves when I'm on mushrooms to really? Not think that there's entities. I've seen it. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's inside me or outside me, but I've seen them so many times that it's just that it's that I don't doubt it at all. I don't know what it is. I just know it could be an archetype. I don't really care. It's a, you know, the Tibetans consider it a projection of the self. You're witnessing a but mm-hmm. they also consider everything a projection of the fucking self. So right. it's not like it's just you're seeing yourself. I just think there are most definitely, it's a very big universe that we're in, and it's a fractal universe. And I just, if you've ever had any like deep psychedelic experience, it's funny because you will pause if someone asks, "Do you believe in angels?" You'll be like, "Well,
no way." Yeah, for
sure. I don't know. I just I it's like, you know, before I start dealing with them, I got to figure out how to be nicer to people. Right. You know what I mean? Before right. I start having conversations,
be nicer to yourself. Fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Deal with that first, you know, and then after you figure out a way to make friends with yourself and amends to the people you've hurt, then start saying hi to the elves and the gnomes and the demons yeah. and the angels, you know, and see what they have to say. But right now, I'd probably just end up hurting an angel's feelings, you know? I'd end up, like, saying some shitty thing or sending a mean text.
I remember when I was on Iboga, I had a lot of time, and I felt like I was communicating with the higher selves of people who are living and deceased. You know, there was no distinction. And I've had that experience before where I'm communicating with a living higher self. So I don't think you have to be dead to communicate with your higher self. It exists and coexists with life. But anyways, I was having these really, you know, awesome conversations. You know, I found that the higher self is generally more full of life, more animated, more happy. Like, people think of the higher self like, "Oh yes, hello Aubrey, how are you?" But if I talk to your higher self, it'd be like, "Aubrey, what's up?" You know, you'd be full and as rich full of passion and life as you ever were in this life. But it would just be pure happiness, like all lightness.
Wow.
In you. And so those were my conversations. Some were very funny, and you know, they would joke around. It was very vibrant.
But that's crazy. Wow, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, that's cool, man.
Yeah, it was cool to experience that. And I actually, you know, I've told this story before, but it was like I had an advent calendar where I could go knock on all the doors of anybody significant in my life and talk to them and interact. And after we were done interacting, they'd be like, "Hey, get out of here. Stop talking to me. I know it's fun, but you got other stuff to do." And they would, you know, so we'd have our discourse, and then I'd go, I'd be like, "Hey, let's talk again." Like, "Get out of here. Get the fuck out of here. You know, what are you doing, Aubrey? You got other stuff to do." So, but anyway, so I started to ask some of these, you know, I was like, "Well, can you give me like secret information, like who's going to win the next Super Bowl? Because you have like all this time to think about it." And at that point, it's like something weird happened. It was almost like I was trying to break a rule. And maybe I didn't believe that that could happen. And they would start to like fade away at that point.
See ya.
And it was this weird thing. Like, this is a line where we can't cross. So I still don't know if these are inner projections or outer projections, but it's this kind of weird zone that I feel like if like the LeBron James of Iboga could go in there and really not be scared off by this threshold, you know, you could start to really learn, is this an inner projection or are these actual beings that have access to other weird information?
You know, I think that's a question that we all have to answer on our own. You got to be careful. That's all. I do think that there, I don't think it's an accident that when the ideas of these beings come up, there's always like a warning that goes along with it, which is just protect yourself, go into it with the right intentions.
Yep.
Don't stir up something that necessarily you're not ready to, somebody you're not ready to hang out with, you know?
Right.
Because you need to be ready. You need to be ready.
Yeah. You can't go in. It's just like you can't go into a neighborhood you don't know, you know, if you have no idea about it, just walk in like, yeah. I mean, there's not, you know, go into a super bad neighborhood and just cruise around, clueless. You know, you got to be able to deal with things and deal with that space. And I think there's some very skilled people who've been doing that. Some of the, you know, indigenous shamans or some of these people
for
thousands of years. And they know how to navigate these waters.
We think we're so fucking advanced because we have apples and iPhones. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, there are these people who are like essentially spaceship captains existing in the jungle. And they really don't, I don't know how much they give a shit about our iPhones and how much they just think it's like, you've got to, if you've been like you said, going through these levels of existence and merging with the Godhead every night, you're not going to be that impressed by Candy Crush Saga or, you know what I mean? It's like, you're not going to really care about Tinder when you've been in the company of essentially extraterrestrials. It's not going to be that big a deal. And it's so funny how puffed up people in the West get, you know, because you think, oh, they just live in the jungle. What do they do? Right. Eat coconuts all day and sniff glue, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and you meet most of them too, and they're really good at enjoying the controlled folly, if you want to use that. You know, they're really fucking good at just letting all that shit go. And
I love what you said.
Eating chicken tenders and, you know, hanging out and not really tenders, but, you know, I went up to the shaman, he's eating, you know, these fried chicken pieces and laughing and joking around and playing pranks on each other. And then when he gets into shaman mode, you know, then it's fucking work. It's rattling the leaves. It's singing the Icaros. It's blowing out another dimension so that you can enter it and be in a sacred space. You know, but then the next day it's back to just kind of fucking around and smiling and, you know, laughing. And it's
I love it, man. That idea that everybody who's spiritual has to be so fucking solemn, and like the idea, I love what you said about the higher self, man, that it's not like you get to the higher self and you're like hanging out with like some boring old man. It's just like, it's like, of course it would be you in your greatest moment.
That just gave me chills when you said it, because it really was like that. It was like I was talking to people at their very fucking greatest, you know. And even some people, we had to hash out some pretty serious stuff. Like my father, I had to go and hash out some trauma that was happening. But at the end, you know, after that solemn conversation, it was still, you know, a big smile, the pure smile that I remember from there. And it's the best part of them, no matter what it is.
You're the best, man.
You're so the best, Duncan.
Well, Aubrey, where can the listeners find you?
The best place to communicate with me, I'm putting a lot of love into the Facebook page right now. So facebook.com/warriorpoetus, and Twitter is @warriorpoetus. And keep up with me that way. I don't really do the Instagram thing, but Facebook is definitely the best place.
You gotta do the gram.
I just don't know what I'm going to take pictures of, you know?
Take pictures of anything.
Yeah.
It's so fun. You'll get addicted, man. You got to get those likes.
I know.
You got to fuck these angels, man. You got to get on the gram. All right, Aubrey, thank you very much. This was wonderful.
That was awesome.
Okay, everybody, that was Aubrey Marcus. You can find out more about him by going to warriorpoet.us, or you can also try some awesome Onnit products like Alpha Brain. I love that stuff. I can't really have it around because when it's around, I can't stop eating it. It's like low-level speed. Anyway, thanks for listening. If you like us, give us a nice rating on iTunes and have a happy Valentine's Day or whatever day you happen to be experiencing. Don't get eaten.